Lulu, doctors still running tests. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Well, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio program today. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and you're listening to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. In mid-October, Lord Christopher Monckton, former advisor to Margaret Thatcher, spoke at Bethel University in St. Paul, Minneapolis. And during his presentation, he warned Americans that President Obama was poised to cede U.S. sovereignty at the then-upcoming Copenhagen Climate Summit. That summit took place in mid-December. And there was an associated YouTube video of the presentation given by Lord Christopher Monckton out on the YouTube, out on the Internet, of course. And that YouTube presentation has received now well over 2.5 million hits on it. You probably have heard of that presentation or maybe heard a portion of it. I printed a little bit of a portion of it out on our blog today at sermonaudio.com. And I printed the portion that primarily speaks to the idea of truth, that this is a matter that is dealing with the truth. Well, now that that summit, after having collapsed in chaos, partly because of hacked emails and leaked memos, now that that summit has concluded, what is the outcome? How much did America lose by having our president race to Copenhagen during the final days of that summit and then announce that there had been some sort of a significant agreement that had been reached? Well, on the program with me today, I have a very special guest all the way from the UK. Lord Christopher Monckton himself is on the line here with us, and we want to speak with him today about the consequences of climate change, at least climate change the way it was portrayed there at this conference. I should mention that Lord Christopher Monckton was a special advisor to Margaret Thatcher. Boy, do we need people like Margaret Thatcher these days. When she was a UK Prime Minister from 1982 to 1986, and he gave policy advice on various technical issues. He is also widely recognized as an expert in the field of the qualification of climate sensitivity. And so he's got a long resume, far too long for me to read here on the program today. That'll have to just make do. With that, let me go ahead and say welcome, Lord Monckton, into the Knowing the Truth radio program today.
Well, Pastor Kevin, it's a real honor to be on with you, and what a pleasure, too.
Well, thank you very much. I think you could hear in my opening statement there that we're hoping to get some sort of an update from you. You had in that presentation that was out there on YouTube, you know, stated the dreaded consequences that could have taken place at that UN conference on climate change. I wanted to follow up with you now to see what actually took place. They had desired for an international treaty on governing carbon emissions. How much did the U.S. actually lose in this? Did we win? Was it a great victory for those of us who are trying to stop this environmental train from going down these tracks?
It was an extraordinary victory for common sense. Of course, all the world so-called leaders who went there, and about 115 of them turned up, were all making speeches about how it was absolutely necessary to do something immediately or the planet was doomed. But in reality, you could see that most of them no longer believed it, even if any of them ever did. President Obama went there to try to talk the Chinese into agreeing to binding treaty obligations to have their carbon emissions monitored by the international community, and that they should make real and deep cuts in their carbon emissions. Of course, they are now the biggest emitter in the world simply because of their huge population. And the Chinese, quite rightly in my view, resisted. And even after a 55-minute tete-a-tete between President Obama and Prime Minister, or State Council President, I should call him, Wen Jiabao of China, Wen Jiabao then went straight into the hall and made a speech saying that he was not prepared to be dictated to, and he was not prepared to have international observers telling him how much carbon emissions he could make, and that the Chinese would voluntarily be restrained in their carbon emissions, but they were not going to be told, and they were not going to agree to binding limits. And that marked the end of the last attempt to inflict upon us the draft treaty of the 15th of September, which I came across in mid-October, and I talked about in my speech at Bethel University, which you were kind enough to mention, which has apparently now been seen by something between 4 and 20 million people, depending on whose analysis you use, because it's only one of the hundreds of copies of it that's received 2.5 million. There's a lot of others out there which have received a lot of hits as well. A lot of people in the United States saw that video, and one of the things I had said was you must get in touch with your senator, you must tell them that this treaty shall not pass. And I don't know how many millions actually did, but I know the Senate switchboard was finding it very difficult to field all the calls, and I think that did have an effect. I think probably what it did was it made President Obama realize that it is simply not going to be possible to get any binding treaty through the Senate as it is at present constituted. And, of course, it will be still harder this time next year after the Mexico conference of the states parties to the UN convention, because by that stage there will have been midterm elections in which not only the whole of the House but a third of the Senate are going to be re-elected. And I think a lot of those are going to go Republican on the present showing of the president and his party in the polls, in which case they really can't get any treaty through the Senate. And this reveals two things about the United States. One, the willingness of her own citizens to use the democratic system to get in touch with their senators and say, we're not having this treaty imposed on us. And two, your wonderful constitution, which makes you uniquely among the nations protected against an administration trying to go off the rails and trying to sign your rights away in this appalling draft treaty, which had been through several negotiating rounds by the time I saw it, and not one of the so-called Western negotiators had taken out the provisions in that treaty which were going to deny people the right to choose their own leaders, effectively, because your leaders would no longer have been the Congress. It would have been this hideous UN dictatorship that they were trying to establish. So I would like to congratulate the people of America, people listening to your program, many of whom did the right thing, made their feelings known, and saved not only America, but also for the world, from the hideous bureaucratic centralist dictatorship which was being planned in the name of, an entirely specious name at that, of saving the planet from a problem that doesn't exist. And as I like to put it, the planet was very nicely saved 2,000 years ago, and it doesn't need to be saved again.
Well put. You know, President Obama went to this. I mentioned he had actually showed up there at the waning days of the conference and then, you know, came out with some sort of a statement that they had reached an agreement, a significant agreement, or these types of terminologies were used. What exactly did he promise to them? What does he feel that, you know, I know he tried to salvage this so that it wasn't a complete waste of time for him to go there. What exactly does he walk away with?
Right. What he walked away with is a lot less taxpayers' money than he went in with, because he promised via his Secretary of State a large number of tens of billions of dollars, and depending on who you believe, it's somewhere between $30 and $100 billion of your taxpayers' money to sweeten the deal by effectively bribing third world countries to agree to it. Now, that was a disaster for America's taxpayers, of course, but fortunately I don't think it's going to happen. What they did agree to was that they were going to try to act collectively like King Canute, and they were going to go down to the seashore and put out their hand and say, the sea level shall not rise, the climate shall not change, the temperature shall not rise by more than 3.5 Fahrenheit degrees over the next century. Now, of course, this is not in their gift. The arrogance of today's science and today's politics is so enormous. And I always think of it this way. In the past, until the very recent past, when our political leaders understood that there was a place for religion in politics, they were humbled by that thought, that actually they were only acting as the agents of a sovereign who is sovereign of us all, and therefore they didn't overreach themselves in the way that seems to happen so often today. Now what you get is these people saying, well, we are going to pass an edict, we're all going to come to an agreement that we're going to stop the temperature of the world from rising by 3.5 Fahrenheit degrees. Now, this is quite hilarious. If you stand back and just think how very, very silly that is, how utterly beyond the power of humankind it is to do any such thing. And yet there were thousands of enviro-zombies at this conference. I mean, about 30,000 people went there. And nearly all of them didn't bat an eyelid when this perfectly ludicrous suggestion was made.
Yeah, the arrogance of it certainly jumps out at you when you hear some of the claims that are made. The hype associated with it is just astonishing. There's a new Greenpeace ad that is out. I think you make reference to it in one of the articles that you just wrote out on SPPI blog. Yours is entitled Time to Ban Greenpeace and Give Its Riches to the Poor. I'll make reference to that in just a minute. But I'm going to go ahead and play this Greenpeace ad that's out there now for our listening audience, and then I want to get you to comment on it, if you would, please.
Certainly.
Here we go.
The scientific community released a report that proves beyond a doubt that the Earth is getting warmer. This global warming is caused by things you grown-ups do and by the things you don't. If drastic measures aren't taken soon, by the time I grow up, there won't be any fish left in the sea. Rainforests and clean air will be a thing of the past. The polar ice caps will be gone. Oceans will rise. Entire countries will disappear. Life will change in ways you can't even imagine. There could be famine, worldwide epidemics. Life expectancy will be lower. And we're not just talking about the future. We're talking about my future. But this is no surprise. You idols have known about this for years. And though you could have done something about it, you haven't. You can say, it's not my problem. You can say, I won't be around in 50 years. But from now on, you can't say I didn't know. Starting today, the lines are drawn. You have to choose sides. Either you're for my future, or you're against it. You're a friend, or you're an enemy. I may just be a kid today, but tomorrow will be different. This is the last time I'll be talking to you adults. You've had your chance to fix this problem. Now we have ours. We won't be cute, we won't be patronized, and we will not be denied our future.
Well, Lord Monken, there you have it. There's that new ad put out by Greenpeace. Not only scare tactics, to say the least, you know, and using a young person to do this, but then also, to me, it comes across as a bit threatening.
Well, it is indeed menacing. It's a very, very nasty propaganda use of children. It would be illegal to do this in the United Kingdom. The people who made that ad would go to jail for the exploitation of children. And they would also have some difficulty getting the ad past the Advertising Standards Authority because it is inaccurate in almost every material respect. I should explain that if you see this advert rather than just listening to it, it's spoken by a grubby-faced, very surly kid of about 10 wearing a hood and looking very threatening indeed. And may I just tell you how I would rewrite that ad? And of course I would have it spoken by a well-scrubbed little angel in choir dress with a sad and gentle smile. And this is what she would say. The political community decided by show of hands that there's a 90% chance that most of the last half century's global warming is caused by things you've grown up to do. The scientific community increasingly disagrees. In your generation, measured changes in cloud cover caused 5 times as much warming as CO2 did. If drastic measures aren't taken soon, by the time I grow up, even more millions of people in poor nations will starve because the misuse of food-growing land for biofuels, because you believe in global warming, has doubled world food prices. Global warming, whatever causes it, has no effect on fish or rainforests or air quality. Polar ice caps will still be here. Oceans will rise no faster. No countries will disappear. Crop yields will improve. Epidemics will be fewer. We will live longer than you. Warmer is better. Life will change in ways you can't even imagine, but not because of global warming. Starting today, the lines are drawn. You have to choose sides. Either you're for rational science or you're against it. I may be a kid today, but tomorrow I'll still be a kid. Even so, I can smell nonsense when I hear it. This is the last time I'll pay any attention to the hate-filled, malevolent, anti-capitalist propagandists at Marxist Greenpeace. When I grow up, I'm going to outlaw environmentalism, confiscate its vast wealth, and give the money to the poor people its mad, bad policies have ruined. We will not deny them their future.
Amen. Amen. I love the way that you turned that right on its head, because you make the point in there that this is just not a neutral issue. You know, I think that a lot of people just feel, that first of all, they bought into the propaganda. The environmentalists basically own the news streams on this particular issue. They own a lot of the imagery, you know, the polar bears and the melting ice caps and all of this. So they bought into that. But then I think that they think it's just neutral. You're saying in here it's not neutral. If we buy into this, we will actually be condemning people to poverty and even death because of the misuse of food-growing lands being used for biofuels and other things like that.
This, I think, is a very important point, because millions are dying now. It's not just something that might happen in the future, which is what they're talking about. Millions are dying now. There have been food riots, major food riots, in a dozen regions of the world in just the last 2 years. Why? Because of the doubling of world food prices, which the World Bank says, we're talking of independent authorities here, the World Bank says that nearly all of that doubling of world food prices that happened in just 2 years occurred because of the biofuel scam, because biofuels are now being grown where food used to be grown, and so there's less food around to go around, and that's pushed the prices up. In Haiti, would you believe it, they're living on mud pies made with real mud. And that's what they now eat, because they can't afford anything else. And those mud pies used to sell for 3 US cents each. Now they're 6 US cents each, because of the doubling of world food prices, even affect Haitian mud pies. And people are starving all over the world as a result of this. And you never see a word of this starvation and the misery that's being caused by these lunatic Greenpeace policies anywhere in the Western media, because they too are now Marxists. I'm afraid one has to use this word. There's no point in pretending we're not dealing with what is effectively a resurgence of communism. Of course, it's no longer called communism, because everybody knows that there's a communist, but that's a very unpopular, dirty word. But that is what these people are. They don't care how many people their policies kill, but we do. And marvelously, even the UN is beginning to get the point. It has a right to food rapporteur whose job is to speak up on behalf of the hungry people of the world. And this is what Herr Ziegler, the UN's right to food rapporteur, said just last year. He said, when millions are already starving, to take valuable food-growing land and divert it to growing biofuels is nothing less than a crime against humanity. That's how strongly he put it. And you know, the UN never talks plainly, usually. And for him to say this is a crime against humanity is the strongest possible condemnation of these ghastly policies, all of which, remember, stem from the entirely fraudulent notion that adding a tiny percentage of CO2 to the atmosphere in the next 100 years is somehow going to make a major alteration to the planet's temperature. The answer is, it's not. We know this by observation, apart from anything else. Here we are, sitting here after 15 years now with no statistically significant global warming. And 10 years, in fact, now we've had global cooling. We've just had the third cripplingly cold winter in a row in the West. They've had the same in China. They've had the same right across Russia. And we've got more to come, unfortunately. You've had a series of cold weather records right across the United States for the third year running. When President Obama came back from the Copenhagen conference, he nearly couldn't land in Washington, D.C., because it had had the worst snowfall ever recorded. And none of this is consistent with the notion of global warming, is it? Now, of course, one bad winter wouldn't be a particular concern, and it wouldn't particularly affect the theory, but we've now had three in a row. We've had 9 to 10 years of global cooling. That begins to become significant. It's a long enough period of the climate not responding as the UN had predicted to start raising very serious questions about whether or not any of this is right in the first place. And even if it were right, let me just give you a few interesting figures here, because most people never talk about the numbers in this. It's all qualitative stuff about all those cuddly polar bears and the penguins and heaven knows what else. And everybody feels very sorry for the polar bears, and so they believe they've got to save the planet. Well, as I've said, there's no need for that. But here are the numbers. Let's pretend, just for the moment, that the UN is right in saying that a doubling of CO2 concentration, which they expect to see this century compared with the year 2000, say, they say that will cause 3.3 Celsius of warming. It won't, but let's pretend that it would.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we have this Copenhagen Accord by which, roughly speaking, what's going to happen is that the Western countries are going to agree, they won't comply, but they will agree to cut their carbon emissions by 30%, by one-third, in just the next 10 years, by the year 2020. So that means on average they'll have cut it by, say, 15% per year on average. So we're looking at a reduction in what would otherwise be our emissions of just 3 parts per million by volume over the next 10 years in total, 3 parts per million. And it's not a difficult sum from there to work out that that would cause a forestalling global warming of 0.035 Fahrenheit, about a 30th of a Fahrenheit degree, something you simply couldn't measure.
Right.
That's if we do everything that the Copenhagen Protocol would tell us to do. But the point is this, that the cost of doing that 30% reduction in what is now the cheapest way of generating electricity, which is fossil fuels, will do untold harm to our own economies. It will make, as we've shown from that sum, no difference at all to the climate. And the best thing, therefore, the best policy that a responsible policymaker would advise at this point, and I used to advise Margaret Thatcher on these things, and these are the kind of ways I analyze it, I would say, right, the responsible thing to do is do nothing for another 15 years, because we can then see whether or not the climate responds, whether the temperature starts to rise, because it hasn't been rising for 15 years. Maybe it's not going to rise again. We don't know. Let's wait and see, because waiting and seeing will only cause a rise compared to what would have happened anyway of 0.035 Fahrenheit, which is so tiny an amount, it simply doesn't matter. We can, therefore, afford to wait 10 or even 15 years to see what happens and not spend a single sou on this nonsense until then, and instead deploy these hundreds of billions that they're proposing to spend on this Copenhagen Protocol on alleviating the poverty that our stupid biofuel policies have produced. I would reallocate all of the money we're now spending on climate research and spend a lot on the poor. Then at least I would know it was well spent.
Well said. I think Congress referred to the prices going up due to biofuels as unintended consequences. Well, they do a lot of things that have unintended consequences, and so we have to certainly beware in their effort to help. Oftentimes they often hurt, and that's what we find out with this issue. We have to take a very quick commercial break. We'll be back in just a minute. I want to tell the listeners you are certainly welcome to participate in the conversation today. Let me give you a couple ways you can do that. One is by phone. It's good across the country. 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-6767. 888-660-9535. I also have my email up and running, kevin@knowingthetruth.org. That's kevin@knowingthetruth.org. And Twitter is up and running as well, and so you can send a tweet, and the account is Knowing the Truth. We'll be back in just a couple minutes with Lord Monckton.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
A compelling mix of ministry, public policy, lifestyle, and lighthearted fun on the phone. Janet Parshall's America.
For a lot of people, they're scared to death. They'd rather go to the mission field than to bring any kind of spiritual influence into the workplace. And we know we're being truthful here. Why is that?
We're excited to have her. She's Janet Parshall, and it's Janet Parshall's America. Right here, weekday afternoons from 2 to 5 on Christian Talk 660.
It's great pizza for a great price. So pack up the family and head over to Stevie B's near Walmart on Woodruff Road in Greenville. At Stevie B's, you'll find friendly faces and at least a dozen pizzas out at all times. Or you can order a pizza and they'll make it fresh just for you at no extra cost. So visit Stevie B's today.
Hi, this is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and I want to take the time to thank John, Ruth, Carlos, and the good folks over there at Stevie B's Pizza for their support of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
This is Johnny Erickson Tata, and I am so fascinated with the story of that disabled man who begged every day by the temple gate. Remember that? One day, Peter and John stopped in their path and healed that beggar. Now, here's why the story's fascinating. Jesus must have walked by that man 100 times, and I'm sure each time Jesus passed the gate, he heard that beggar's cry. But he did not do anything to help him. Why didn't Jesus heal him? Well, Ecclesiastes says there is a time to heal, a time to tear down, a time to build. In other words, there is a peak time for everything, even healing a beggar. And that time was for Peter's ministry, not the Lord's. So friend, if it seems Jesus is not answering your prayers, please know he has not passed you by. If he remembered you on the cross, he remembers each prayer you pray. And the answer to come, it's all a matter of his timing.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. We've been speaking with Lord Christopher Monckton about global warming or climate change. I think the actual title of this environmentalist movement has changed now that things weren't warming up as much as they thought it would. They kind of morphed it into a different name, just climate change in general. We've been just talking about some of the impact of the Copenhagen summit that took place, what was gained and what was lost, and some of the ramifications of all that's taken place about this important issue. I want to let you know that you can join the conversation again. The telephone number, it's a toll-free number across this the country, in fact, outside the country as well, but it's 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535. And again, I have my email up and running. That's kevin@knowingthetruth.org. Knowing the Truth is all one word, kevin@knowingthetruth.org. And also Twitter is up and running as well, and the account is Knowing the Truth. And I'll be happy to try to work in your question or your comment through any of those means there today. So let's go to the phone line. We got somebody up on line. I'm sorry, I'll let you get that. Go ahead, Scott. Josh, get it on line 3, and then we'll come back to that in just a second. I wanted to just let you know, too, that you can find out. I mentioned a few things on the program today about a video with Lord Monckton on there. There's this full presentation that you can hear. You can certainly do that by just going to the Knowing the Truth website and clicking on the blog for today. And I have a link there that'll take you right to YouTube and right where you can find that. Let's go to the phone line very quickly. Don, go ahead from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and then we've got another one right behind you.
Okay, Kevin. Well, first of all, I just want to say that I do feel sorry for the Penguins. They won the Stanley Cup earlier this year. Now, they lost three in a row, so...
I think he's talking about a different Penguin.
I kind of gathered that. I feel sorry for that kid. I mean, I just wonder how many... If he was talked into this... I mean, if I would have talked that way to or about any adults when I was 10, I would have been slapped in the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, you know, that's just blackmail is what this is.
Yeah.
But it's ironic to me. I heard something like 140 jets were used for that summit and all kinds of limousines. I thought that we were supposed to be against that.
Yeah, good point.
1,200
limousines was a number I heard, but yeah, good point.
Yes, and my pastor was making a comment last Christmas Eve. He was saying that, you know, the money that's been wasted in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, you know, the poor could have been fed. Cancer could have been on a way to a cure for cancer or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all because of this misguided kind of thing. But I'd like to ask the guest, and I don't know if he has a perception of this, but how do you think the president feels now? Is he mad? Is he sad? I can't imagine he'd be glad about the outcome. Any thoughts on that? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, thank you, Don. And I would point you to a recent interview that he did with Jim Lehrer just a few days, right around Christmas time. And during that interview, the president said that the American people have a right to be disappointed by what took place in Copenhagen. So it's not over. You know, this is a major agenda point for 2010. They're certainly not done. The facts don't seem to matter very often. But Lord Moncton, would you comment upon Don's question there? What do you think the general mood is in the White House and among the president now that Copenhagen is over with?
I think they are quite shocked at how badly it went. I think they're very surprised that President Obama did not work his magic with State Council President Wen Jiabao of China. And I think what they're beginning to realize is that it's all very well being able to make gaseous speeches about hope and change and hope, or any rearrangement of those two words. But when it comes to actual government and actually dealing in tough international negotiations with world leaders who really are trained in what they're doing, and Wen Jiabao is one of the cleverest men on the planet, and Obama frankly isn't, then you can see that there are some shortcomings which his administration is now trying to work out how they're going to address. They had thought that as socialists and communists together, and I'm going to use that word communist again advisedly, he would be able to persuade Wen Jiabao to go along with what he wanted. But quite rightly, the State Council president is saying, look, I have a poor country on my hands, and I want to lift my people out of that poverty. The cheapest way to do that is with cheap electricity. The cheapest form of electricity is fossil fuels. I've got stacks of coal and oil and gas available in China, and I want to use it, and I want to use it as fast as I need to lift my people out of poverty, because that's the only way in the long run to stabilize populations, to make people rich when the population growth settles down all by itself.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the points that Wen Jiabao made very forcefully to President Obama. And President Obama didn't really understand and didn't expect to be resisted.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're now having a lot of late-night strategy sessions, I should think, in the White House, trying to work out what they now do. And I think what's going to happen is this, that the cap-and-trade bill that only scraped through the House and should never have been passed even there,
mm-hmm.
is probably not going to pass the Senate unless they take cap-and-trade out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to do with this what they did with health care, where the whole point of the health care bill was to have the public option.
Mm-hmm.
The socialist state controlling everything.
Right.
That failed, and they had to take it out, which leaves the health bill as more of an irritant than anything else. It'll cost a lot of money, it'll be disastrous, but it won't be the kind of red in tooth and claw communism that had been hoped for. And I think the same is going to happen now with the cap-and-trade bill. There'll be everything left in that bill except cap-and-trade, because they won't be able to get it through the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that they've realized that another thing they've realized, because they're very fine-tuned to this, they realize that the people no longer believe in global warming.
Mm-hmm.
That has now changed. It changed not just because of Climate Gate, but because the weather hasn't been too good for the last three winters.
Sure.
The facts don't stack up. And a small but very gallant and now rapidly growing band of climate scientists is willing to stand up even at the risk of being turfed out of its positions and sacked, because you can be fired if you belong to an American university and you don't believe in this climate stuff.
Sure.
You can still be fired, but yet people are having the courage now to stand up and say, sorry, but this is nonsense and we're just not prepared to go along with it any longer. More and more of them are doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And as that happens, and as the people see it happening, they can see this is a one-way drift in public opinion. There's nobody now who formerly didn't believe in global warming that now does. It's always the other way round. And Obama is watching his own political support drain away because of his backing for what is essentially a scientific fraud. And I think people are actually going to go to jail for fraud and racketeering when all this is over. And now that that's been realized by Obama, I think he's going to downplay this. He's no longer going to be so keen on pursuing it. Yes, it's a great way of introducing socialism and extra taxation and extra regulation and all the things that communists like. But he's not going to get away with it. His own people are telling him that, particularly in the Senate. They're saying, look, you know, this one is a dead duck. It's dead in the water. Just don't keep trying to push it any further.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's now realized that. And although we shouldn't be too overconfident, I think it is all over by the shouting.
Oh, good, good. I hope that's the case. You heard it here first. That's the prediction for 2010. Let's run back to the phone lines. We got Ron from Greenville on line one there. Hey, Ron.
Hey, I've got a situation where I talk to people, and I have one lady tell me, give me a thing, a printout from National Geographic, and say, now this is where the proof is and everything else. And my response is always, because most people don't pay attention to facts anyway, is follow the money,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll give a website or something like that. Now, I'd like to hear a comment on that, but also, do you have any ways in which we can use this evangelistically in order to present the truth of the gospel and the truth of the word of God to people? And I'll listen offline.
Yeah, good point, Ron. I have seen some articles where people are using it evangelistically that way to say, first of all, look at what the promise was in the book of Genesis. The Lord said he wasn't going to destroy the world by flood again. And a lot of what is being purported, you know, with the melting of the ice caps and these types of things, they're talking about raising the water level. I just saw not that long ago Arnold Schwarzenegger in San Francisco unveiling a map that showed San Francisco being underwater. You know, and he was saying that this could take place within 5 years. And so I think that we certainly can point people back to the scriptures and say, you know, look at the Lord, we have a promise. Every time you see that rainbow in the sky, we're reminded of the promise that God gave that the earth would never again be destroyed in this manner. So these doomsday destruction people, I think that it's relatively easy for us to go to the Word of God and talk about these things. Lord Monckton, I wanted to get your comment specifically on Ron's portion of the question that deals, too, with the idea of follow the money. This is basically just, at least it was in its heyday here, a global wealth redistribution system, wasn't it?
Well, that is exactly what was intended. They were going to take money from rich countries and give it to the even richer people that would run the world government. That was what it was all about. It was not going to be from the rich to the poor. It was going to be from the rich to the even richer. So that's been stopped. But, I mean, Ron is quite right to say, follow the money. These people at National Geographic, they point to various changes that happen in the climate, and then they say, well, this therefore must be our fault. That's the one of the oldest and most serious logical fallacies ever. It's the argumentum ad ignorantiam. It's the argument from ignorance. We don't know what's causing it, so we'll blame it on what we like, and you have to go along with it. And he's quite right. It is just people getting rich out of exploiting the scientific ignorance, and indeed ignorance of classical logic, among the general population these days. But
mm-hmm.
I would also like to comment on the second part of what he said.
Go
because
ahead.
If we go to Genesis chapter 1, verse 26,
where man is given dominion over the earth and all that is in it and upon it and under it and over it, and all the creatures and all the fishes of the sea and the birds of the air. With that stewardship, of course, goes responsibility. And the Christian Church has taught since the very earliest times that we must exercise that responsibility in a sensible and commensurate and humane and moderate way. And that, I think, is a very important piece of teaching. And you're quite right when you say, Pastor, that we are guaranteed that the earth is not going to be destroyed again by a vengeful God. Mm-hmm. That does still leave open the possibility that we might somehow destroy it by ourselves. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that it can be plausibly argued any longer that doubling the concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere, which is only there in a tiny fraction at the moment, is possibly going to make the kind of huge differences that the environmental movement would like us to believe, and so would the UN like us to believe, because they're all making money out of it. Greenpeace now has a fleet of ships bigger than the British Navy. Goodness knows who's paying for it, but it certainly isn't the pennies of the individual subscribers.
Right.
I would think there are some foreign governments in giving them money there, and certainly if you ask Greenpeace any questions at all about where its funding comes from, it becomes very wriggly and coy and shuffles off into the darkness. So certainly follow the money is one side of this, and I think Ron also makes a very good point that yes, we can use this as a way of spreading the gospel in a number of different directions. The one in which I think we need to do this is that if you don't ensure that science respects the truth, and the absolute objective truth, you know, what is the truth of science in this question? If we don't have scientists respecting that, if we do have things like this biofuel scam, which is actually killing millions of our fellow citizens worldwide, then that is a moral issue and a very serious one, which the churches should have a great deal to say about. They should not stand by and say, well, we're going to drift along with the political and environmental left and the extremists on this. No, not if that's killing people now. We're going to say, stop, wait, let's see whether the temperature goes where the extremists are saying that it's going to go, and in the meantime, let's spend the money we would be spending on that on alleviating the poverty of the poor. That's the moral issue. And I think if the churches were to start standing up and preaching that kind of message, they would find a very wide degree of sympathy among thinking people everywhere, regardless of their own religion.
That's right. Obviously, the name of this program is Knowing the Truth, and so that idea of making the truth available and known and getting to the truth about a certain issue is vitally important. You say this in that YouTube video, one of the quotes that I put out on my website, out on the blog for today's program. Here's a quote as you're speaking through your presentation. You say, quote, here is why the truth matters. It was all very well for jesting Pilate to ask the question and then not to tarry for the answer. But that question that he asked, what is truth, is the question which underlies every question, and in the end it is the only question that really matters. When you ask that question, what you are really asking is, what is the truth about the matter? And we are going to see why it matters morally and socially and politically as well as economically and scientifically, that the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, should inform public policy on this particular question. And so I think you're absolutely right. You know, that as believers, we should be pointing out that judging a matter before you know the truth of it is something that Scripture condemns. And obviously, if we follow a policy that is not based upon truth, then it's going to cause untold hardship and in some of these cases, even, you know, dramatic consequences upon the poor. So there are certainly many reasons, as you're pointing out, that we as believers should not participate in propagating this lie that is taking place. You know, I saw another interesting quote here just recently where somebody said in this quote that the answer to climate change was being put forth by the climate change movement, that they were calling for population reduction as a solution to global warming. Have you heard that quite a bit?
Yes, I've heard a lot of that is being being said. I had it said by two socialists who came to visit me just today. And I said to them very firmly, look, I'm going to look at this from a straightforward demographic point of view, and that is, it's well known among demographers that the one thing that stabilizes population growth and brings it into balance so that you get a stable population is to raise the standard of living of the poorest. Nothing else works. You can try one-child policies, you can try compulsory sterilization, you can try these ghastly abortions, you can try artificial contraception, all these kind of hideous interferences with God and nature. None of those actually work to reduce population unless you do it at the point of a machine gun, as they try to do in China. And that's not how a free society develops. What really works is lifting the standard of living of the poorest so they come out of poverty, then the population will balance itself. And therefore, advocating reduction of population while at the same time advocating making everybody poorer by stopping people from burning fossil fuels to create CO2, that is exactly the wrong policy to pursue if you want the population to stabilize. Because if you make people poorer, then they will breed faster. That's the way it works. Get used to it. And I find it extraordinary that the amoral left tend to take this line about how we need to tell other countries how at what rate they can and can't breed.
Yeah.
And I said to these two socialists today, and they looked horrified when they thought about it, I said, that is a form of colonialism by stealth, which is far nastier than the generally benevolent colonialism when the British Empire ran large chunks of Africa. Mm-hmm. I said, this is not the way forward. And I think in the end they began to agree. I think it's very, very serious that anyone should suggest that we should interfere in the natural processes of population. The world is well capable of sustaining a population of humans quite a lot larger than today, even without unduly encroaching on the habitats of other creatures that we share the planet with. And I think, therefore, a great deal of caution should be used before we get into the business of enforced population reduction. That is yet another desire on the part of the socialist or communist left to interfere, and interfere in a very basic way, with the rights of human beings in the poorer countries. Mm. And I, for one, find it disfiguring and distasteful and offensive.
Sure. You know, how juxtaposed to what you were just talking about with the dominion mandate found in the book of Genesis. Here's their solution, just get rid of the people, and then the planet will be fine. Well, the planet is here for us to enjoy. I think it's also really disingenuous of the president and others involved in this to try to tie these climate treaties with these other countries and, in his words, getting out in front of this global warming initiatives and all of these things. He tries to tie them to economic growth, saying that, you know, windmill production and solar panels, we're going to be out on the front of this, and it's really going to be an engine for our economy. And he even goes so far as to say that, you know, these would be the types of jobs that can't be outsourced. And I just sit there scratching my head saying, why couldn't they build windmills or solar panels? Don't look all that complicated to build one or to mass produce. And so I don't know where all this is coming from, and I think that there isn't really this economic engine that he's talking about.
No, there isn't. I mean, that is the idea that green jobs are going to be real jobs is nonsense. As I put it in testimony in front of Congress earlier this year, I said green jobs are the new unemployment, and that's what it means. If you stop people from generating the electricity that powers our entire economy in the cheapest possible way, which is by using fossil fuels, then you put up the price of goods and services to everybody, and in putting up that price, you will reduce the economic activity. It's the old law of supply and demand and the old price law. And in the end, what President Obama is doing is he's committing, because he doesn't know any macroeconomics either, what is known to economists as the broken window fallacy, which is if you go around smashing up somebody's windows, you're creating a job for the glazier. Yes, you are, but you're destroying the capital asset in the shape of the window.
Yeah.
And so in the end, you lose by doing that. And what he's doing is that if we smash up our existing economy and then we all have windmills instead, that's going to create a dynamic and vibrant economy. It isn't. It's going to destroy a dynamic and vibrant economy and replace it with something that better suited to the 14th century. Mm. That's not going to be progress. It's not going to be good for the people. And the people he will hurt most, if he persists in this line, is, of course, the people who voted for him. It's the poor people, the working people, the blue-collar folk, the people on whose backs and whose sweat and whose energy America was and is and always will be built. It's not the chattering classes, thee and me, Pastor, who make America spin. It's the working folk. Mm-hmm. And they are not going to tolerate very much longer this nonsense about saving the planet, when they know, and they know it very clearly now, that the very first jobs to go will be their jobs. It's already happening. Mm-hmm. A large aluminium furnace was recently closed because the firm that ran it could not buy electricity from anyone. Why? Because the environmental left have been objecting to the building of new fossil fuel or nuclear power stations for 20 years. There's now 150 of them they've succeeded in stopping, and the electricity is already running out, and they're already closing down one by one major users of electricity in America, and those jobs are now going overseas. That particular plant is going to India. We've had the same thing in the UK here. We've just lost a huge steelworks. That's gone to India. Why? Because we can no longer buy the electricity because the left have succeeded in stopping us from building the power plants we need. If anybody thinks that's a good idea, then I have to tell them it's a very bad idea. And the first people who are going to suffer are the people who were, and I'm going to put this bluntly, and I know I shouldn't interfere in your politics, unwise enough to vote Democrat last time round. Because this is not a Democrat administration, it's an anti-democratic administration, and it's one which is going to cruelly hurt and destroy the working people of America, unless we can make President Obama change his mind, in particular on this climate nonsense.
I remember when he was on the campaign trail, I listened to the audio where he was saying that he was going to make it so expensive for those fossil fuel producing companies that they just would have to go out of business, basically. And so, trying to force their hand. Lord Monckton, you've been so gracious to give us so much time today. I know you're extremely busy going around the world and speaking in a number of different venues. You mentioned they're speaking before Congress. I mentioned a couple of the articles that you had written on these various websites at Copenhagen, and just doing a number of things. And we really appreciate your work, and we appreciate you taking the time out today to visit with us on the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Well, it's been an honor and a pleasure to take part, because I think there's a really good spirit about your program, and I hope that the good Lord will continue to smile upon you and your work. And I'm going to end, as I always do, first of all, by mentioning my website again, which is scienceandpublicpolicy.org, and there you'll find many papers and data on the climate, and some of them are, most of them are very clearly written for the layman. There's a blog as well, which I update more or less daily, so there's plenty to read. But also, I finally say to you all, God bless America. Where would we be without you? The free world needs you, and it needs you now more than ever.
Well, thank you very much, and I wholeheartedly agree there. Thank you. We've been speaking with Lord Christopher Monckton over the last hour here, talking. Let me say that he was a special advisor to Margaret Thatcher as part of the when she was UK Prime Minister from 1982 to 1986, and he gave policy advice on various technological issues. I read through them, far too many for me to mention, but very, very intense technological issues that he consulted with the Prime Minister and gave counsel to her during that time. He's also, as you can hear today in his comments, and if you've read any of his material or listened to that YouTube video, he's a widely recognized expert in the field of the quantification of climate sensitivity. That's important, because that means that he actually looks at the data. You see, he's not just coming up with policy and pulling things out of of the air. He looks at the data, and that's all he's really saying in many of his speeches. He's saying, look at the data and see what the data actually says, not the massaged data that came out during ClimateGate scandal, but the actual data itself. And when we look at the data, we see a number of things. One, that there has been fluctuations in the temperature of the Earth. It's not something, the amount of fluctuation is not something that's catastrophic. The amount that's done by humans is insignificant to the way that it's being portrayed today, and all of these types of topics. So he does just an excellent job at talking about this particular issue. I want to let you know this is our final broadcast, obviously, for 2009. We'll see you back here again next week on Tuesday. By the way, thank you very much for listening. During 2009, I think we'll well over 60,000 downloads of the radio broadcast, and just 1.7 million people going out reading the blog this year. And so it's just been a real blessing, and thank you very much for your support. Next Tuesday, the 24/7 Christian with Anthony Salvaggio. You won't want to miss it. It's a study in the book of James. We need the wisdom of the book of James, certainly, more than ever. We'll see you again next week. Have a wonderful new year. We'll see you.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Life-changing teaching and talk for the Carolinas and Georgia. Christian Talk 660. WLFJ, Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson.
Fox News Radio. I'm Lisa Brady.